But at the same time, you might wonder, why did the professor choose to share this to you all at this juncture? What was the idea behind it? What was the point of those abstruse questions posed in the IL5 assignment? Well, actually, as I have alluded to it, I made it very clear explicitly in the assignment. I aimed at two main themes in this round. Number one, exploring this intricate dynamics, if you will, between external and internal human conditions in which we are boxed as moral agents. Number two, expanding moral agency, the notion of moral agency, to the whole society as a corporate entity. That was the second idea. The title of this part five, is also indicative of these themes, especially the first one. That is, that the part five is titled Ethical Choice and Human Condition. So we will use an abbreviation CC, as you can see over here. We'll use the CC referring to the two words in the title, the choice and condition. That is, this part intends to give you a chance to think about the fact that the ethical choices are made by moral agents with the constraints imposed upon us by a particular state of affairs which calls for definite moral choice and action. Then it becomes an important question to ask. What is the very nature of those constraints that we are put under, given that an ethical choice can be thought of as an outcome of interaction between these two forces? One, these external forces imposed upon us by the sheer physicality of the state of affairs, and our internal drives of moral kinds from a human agency in the pursuit of moral ideals, of course. The second question is the concern with the question on the degree or the extent to which the context of determining a worth of an individual in that life or situation is replicated in the current society we are living in. So we'll get back to that later portion of the perhaps in the separate lecture, I suppose. Now, it was good to see for me. That almost everyone got it right on the question as to which course of action in that lifeboat situation was utilitarian and which one was Kantian. It does not call for any further clarification or elaboration. But when the question on the first main themes was cast in terms of the two different modes of interaction between these two forces, namely, as I put it in the assignment, number one, the rigid nature of human states of affairs, where we happen to fall under, and therefore are subject to the constraints therein, on the one hand, and our inherent drives stemming from our desires as well as obligations to make the right choice, or at least a best one with good intentions, on the other hand. When it comes to this question, that when it is cast in this fashion, it is a little bit different matter. It was not that straightforward. Well, in the subsequent two sub-questions, I describe two modes of interaction between the above two forces, if you will, for the lack of a better word, I would say. It was a bit of an intentional act as well as an inevitable thing for me to use somewhat abstruse expressions to describe these two different modes. The first one is the very mode of moral thinking that no matter what the circumstances may be, that is, come what may, we as moral agents should strive to attain moral ideals, excuse me, by staying above. This is the important part, staying above. Oh, Let me repeat this from the beginning. We as moral agents should strive to attain moral ideals by staying above those vagaries and unsettling aspects of the circumstances by virtue of sticking to the preconceived principles. Obviously, that is Kantian or deontological mode of moral thinking. Conversely, when we adopt a mode of moral thinking such that what is to be done is to be contingent upon what is possible given the circumstances, not by staying above them, even to the point of being blind to them or even ignoring them, but by subjecting our drives and desires to a particularity of the state of affairs where a moral judgment is called for. Of course, that is utilitarian or teleological mode of moral thinking. For Kantians, we are supposed to attain the dignity of moral agency by transcending circumstantial precariousness of human states of affairs. For utilitarians, we are supposed to be acutely sensitive to varying possibilities that a situation presents to human agency. What a contrast. Yes, we are right in the middle of it. Yes, we can conceive of some kind of a continuum. Continuum, can I use this term? Continuum. C-O-M. So we can conceive of some kind of a continuum upon which we are desperately striving to hold on to something. It is as if we were riding on a dangling pendulum, if you will. It would be an interesting observation to make that the Captain Alec Holmes, in the movie that you have watched, was adamantly Kantian at the beginning, before he pursued utilitarian course of action in a very dogged manner. Can you recall his solemn look on his face when he made that fatal change of heart? Well, actually, there are many issues where divisions in the philosophical ideas run deep for ages and centuries, from all the way to Plato, from Plato to all the way down to our times. For example, out of universals and particulars, which one is more ontologically real? I am not going to get into explaining what this issue is concerning, except just mentioning it because we are passing by, or other questions such as, are we really free, totally immune from causation, where everything is determined by something else? Or are all the actions we end up choosing and doing totally determined by the pre-existing conditions, external or internal? To what extent is some sort of a compatibility between causation and human freedom possible, if at all? In any mode. The contrast between these two ethical schools of thought that we are concerned with, or that you're studying in this course, is certainly on equal par with all those cases of contrasting ideas. It is an undeniable fact of human condition that we are living with the constant clash between these two modes. There is no point in denying it or circumventing it. Rather, we have to confront it squarely and learn how to make the best out of it and figure out what it takes to do so. Now, going back to the series of sub-questions. In the third one, I ask you to identify the most directly relevant dichotomy out of many dichotomies that we have studied all along. I'm not going to go over them again, since we rather had somewhat extensive discussions on them up to this point. Of course, given that all those dichotomies are effective reference points, according to which these two schools of thought and morality can be contrasted, they are all related to each other, one way or the other, to varying degrees. To that extent, there isn't any one dichotomy that is totally irrelevant. They are all relevant, at least indirectly, if not directly. But the question was to identify the most directly relevant to the two modes of moral thinking explained up to this point in terms of interaction between these two forces, external and internal. What was interesting to see, for me to see that, is that the overall convergence of answers that were quite observable in the previous questions to this point cannot be found here when it comes to this point anymore. It appears that many of you took a particular dichotomy that seems to exert most strong appeal to you, or a particular dichotomy that you can most comfortably identify your way of classifying the school to the two schools of thought with. But let's look at the last sixth dichotomy. What was that? It was the dichotomy on two notions of imperative. Remember this term, imperative. They are, first, the categorical imperative. The other is hypothetical. Categorical versus hypothetical imperative. As you may recall, we have studied this particular dichotomy, among others, in part 3 through EQ30. In the assignment of IR3. Indeed, this dichotomy directly corresponds to the aforementioned two modes of moral thinking in terms of the two opposite ways of interaction between the two forces, external and internal. Kantian way of thinking morality as a categorical imperative is exactly to transcend the very vicissitudes, of human affairs. Can I use this term? Vicissitude. Perhaps I should put it up here. Pardon my pronunciations. Vicissitude. Put it differently, the very whimsical nature of human affairs. So in other words, Kantian way of thinking morality as categorical imperative is exactly an attempt to transcend this vicissitude of human affairs just by adhering to the solidity of moral maxims, subjecting dignity of humanity to the constant mutability of circumstances is simply out of the question for Kantians. For them, it is very vulgar perception of how we are supposed to be immoral. Utilitarian way of thinking morality as hypothetical imperative is exactly the opposite. We cannot be simply blind to variations inherent in human affairs. We should rather learn how to go along with them. Moral courses of action should be contingent upon what are the possibles and obtainables from reality for the purpose of improving human conditions. It is my hope at this point, then, that everyone is conversant with this dichotomy and should be in a position to command these terms, categorical imperative and hypothetical imperative, and it should be clear about what these terms entail in a particular context of discussions from now on. Well, at this point, if I can take you further into a more abstract realm at this point, I would like to submit to you all that these modes of moral thinking are rather born out of a unique metaphysical constraint in spatial-temporal dimensions. Space and time are the two fundamental dimensions in the fabric of physical reality. Particularly, the temporal dimension is so mysterious in many ways. Now, the advancement in human knowledge is quite enough to tell us that these two dimensions are not actually independent of each other in a way that defies our commonsensical understanding of these two fundamental dimensions. But apart from this theory of relativity, that's one aspect of looking at Our modes of moral thinking operate on this commonsensical understanding of these dimensions. In other words, this unidirectionality built into temporal dimension forces us to choose between these two modes of moral thinking. Morality matters either at the time of choosing, T1, if you will. You can think of this unidirectional temporal dimension right here like this. So there's a T1 and a T2. We have to think about the our circumstances in this unidirectional temporal dimension. So morality matters either at the time of choosing in T1 or at the later time that it results in T2. So divergence between these two modes of moral thinking can hardly be made sensible apart from this unidirectional temporal constraint that we are choosing and acting under. Well, this part is a slightly stretched extension of what we have discussed in this module. If you find it too abstract or abstruse, that's perfectly okay. This part, later part at this point, it was just meant to be an interesting digression of some sort. Okay, so here I wanted to be conversant with all the dichotomies, including the last one about the categorical imperative and the hypothetical imperative in relation to the thinking, the things that we are studying at this point. And let me end this lecture at this point.